Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Did you know that 50 years ago, routine screening of newborns' blood began? It was a huge breakthrough in public health. That diagnostic tool has become more sophisticated. It's wide-reaching in the decades since. And we're going to learn all about it today as we visit with a couple of guests, a couple of doctors who are with us. Dr. May Baker is Associate Professor of Pediatrics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and co-director of the Newborn Screening Laboratory at the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene. Dr. Baker, welcome.
Thank you.
Great to have you with us. With us as well is Dr. Patrice Held, who is co-director of the Newborn Screening Lab at the Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene. And Dr. Held, thank you for joining us today as well.
Yep, thank you for having us.
This is really what a monumental and wonderful 50 years we've had of screening. How was the newborn screening developed 50 years ago? That's a long time ago.
Well, I think all things started with Dr. Robert Guthrie, and the things happened have two important facts motivated him get in the field. The first is he himself had a mental retarded kid, and also this is kind of motivated him to devote it to prevent mental retardation, and also he has a 15-month-old niece at time diagnosed with PKU. That's how drawing his attention to PKU. And he on a mission to develop a test, quick, simple, to detect a PKU. PKU stands for phenylketonuria. So this is the disease start in the newborn screening field. Because his success to detect the PKU early on, and kids can be on the dietary management, and the kids will live relatively normal life without mental retardation, without institutionalization. So the organization called the National Association for Retired Children lobbied the state law mandatory to do the test for PKU. So this is how things started. And 1963, Wisconsin responding, started 1965, started with a single disorder, PKU.
And thanks, Dr. Baker, for that background. And Dr. Held, and since then, we've expanded and covered quite a bit more.
Sure, yep. PKU was the first test in 1965, but it took several years before they eventually added on additional tests. The next year that we added on testing was in 1978, and when the additional diseases were added, such as hypothyroidism and galactosemia, and a disease called maple syrup urine disease. Over the next few years, singleton tests were added, homocystinuria, screening for sickle cell disease came along in the late 80s. And then in 93, we added congenital adrenal hyperplasia. In 94, we added cystic fibrosis.
Wow.
So there's a lot of sort of diseases added on singleton over the years.
And as I think about this, you know, I'm thinking about this, and I am thinking of hearing these disease names, and I'm thinking of, all right, your doctors and so forth. But the average doctor probably, because these are not, every other person doesn't have one of these diseases. These are not diseases or issues that doctors would normally see or even be able to detect, I would think. Is that correct?
That's correct. Because this is more, if you talk about single disorders, they're not common, but cumulatively, they will take quite a bit in the population. Mm-hmm. And again, you are correct, and the general pediatrician may not see one in a many years practice. It's why the program, not only we have the general pediatrician take care of the babies, we also have specialists to, they are trained, emphasize on the certain area to take care of babies with mm-hmm. this condition.
Talking with Dr. Patrice Haldon, Dr. May Baker, who director, co-directors of the Newborn Screening Laboratory at the Wisconsin State Lab of Hygiene. They are pediatricians as well, and great to have them along today to talk about this wonderful testing program now in its 50th, celebrating 50 years of testing of newborns. You may be a parent. Maybe you found out that your baby had a condition or disease because of newborn screening. How did that affect your being able to address it? Are you aware of newborn screening? Did you know that your children were screened? I'm sure they're told, but it's so standard nowadays that people probably don't even think about it. Anyway, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there, and certainly we'd love to hear from you. How's the test conducted, by the way?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead, doctor.
In the hospital setting, the newborn baby undergoes a tiny prick on the bottom of their foot at roughly 24 to 48 hours of life. And so that prick on the bottom of the foot, we are able to collect enough blood on a filter paper card to do all of our testing. So the hospital staff collect this blood and fill out information on the card, such as the baby's birth weight or gestational age, information that we need to help us with our testing. And then that card with the baby's blood on it gets sent to our laboratory. And it is there that we use that baby's blood to then screen for what we have right now is 44 different disorders.
And it's like we're talking here like a few drops.
Oh, yeah.
Huge amount.
It's five drops of blood. And from those five individual drops of blood, we sort of punch out, like almost like a hole puncher, if you could think of that, a little piece of the blood filter paper, and which really only contains about 3 microliters of blood. It's very tiny amounts of blood.
We have callers online. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. If you have a question or comment for us, we would love to hear from you. Let's take a call. Mary in Greendale, let's turn to you. Hi, Mary. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm very appreciative of having this show on. My granddaughter has PKU. And actually, they forgot to do the HEAL test when she was leaving the until she was leaving the hospital as a newborn. So my daughter got the call a couple of days later, and you know, it really does change a whole family's life because you have to really monitor everything that the child eats, and it's a difficult thing, but it really saves so many families the problem of having work with a developmentally disabled child. And I remember when I was younger, we'd go to Southern Colony and it was filled up. And now many of those people who had PKU can avoid that type of outlook for life. So it's wonderful. But I just wanted to check, is there any fear that the HEAL test will not be required in the future?
No. It's hard to imagine, Dr. Baker.
I don't think so. I think we understand the disease better, and we have a more certificate technology. I only can see we'll do more.
Okay.
Great.
Well,
great.
Mary, thank you so much for calling in. And what her comment about Central Colony, I believe she mentioned. First, maybe there may be some people who aren't from what is PKU. We probably need to say a little bit more about what it is and
sure.
Why it's so important to catch it early.
Yep, it's phenylketonuria. The disease shorthand is PKU. Is an inborn error of metabolism. So as we eat protein in our diet, protein is made up of individual amino acids. One of the amino acids is phenylalanine. So as we eat protein in our diet, we are able to acquire phenylalanine, and the phenylalanine needs to be metabolized. And patients with PKU are unable to convert phenylalanine into tyrosine, its next step in the degradation pathway. As a result, phenylalanine builds up in the body and has detrimental effects, primarily with development, and can cause mental impairment.
But if caught...
patients can lead a normal life. They are on a special diet that is low in phenylalanine. They eat really low amounts of protein in their diet, and they're on a formula that is specially made so that they do not build up high levels of phenylalanine.
So we're talking about a major wonderful thing for those families.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes, the key thing is we give just enough for the baby to grow, but monitor not to give over that. And the special formula is contain other amino acid protein you need. Just we really, really strict on the phenylalanine.
Oh, that's wonderful. Audrey in Blair, Wisconsin, turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, this is Audrey. I had a granddaughter that was tested and found that she had a non-working thyroid, and they immediately put her on Synthroid. Otherwise, she would have been a dwarf like they were many, many years ago when they didn't test the babies for that. She's now 28 years old, just the perfect size, mm-hmm. the perfect everything, because they did that testing and found that out for her.
Yeah.
That's a great, great story, Dr. Baker.
Yeah, thank you for sharing your wonderful story with us, because we are in a laboratory, and what we do, and it's really, really motivated to know what we do really make a difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah, with her, it really did. I mean, she would have been a dwarf, they said, if she would have not been noticed.
Yeah. It's very true.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Yes, you're welcome. Thank you for having such a good show.
appreciate it very much. You can join in too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. We'll talk some more about newborn screening and why it's so important right after this short break. Stay with us. Hope you'll stay tuned right through 12:30 today. About 11:45, we're going to be talking about helping kids get and stay active in the summer. Overall, kids are less fit this time of year than during the school year, which you'd think it'd be just the opposite. So hope you'll stay tuned for that important discussion. Right now, though, dealing with another important discussion, talking about the 50th anniversary of newborn screening. It's something that started, as I said, 50 years ago, and it's expanded, and it's really helped thousands of individuals and families. So we're so great to have our two guests, and thankful to have our two guests, Dr. Patrice Held and Dr. May Baker, with us from the State Lab of Hygiene. They are co-directors of the Newborn Screening Lab, and wonderful to have them with us. Again, you can call in at 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question, a comment, or maybe an experience to share. We'd love to hear it. Mary in Washburn, you're next. Thank you very much for calling. Hi.
Hi. I had a question relating to celiac disease. And I'm wondering what qualifies a disease to be tested for in newborns, because I recall several years back there was a program on Wisconsin Public Radio, a Dr. Green from Columbia University in New York, who's an expert on celiac, and during that program a Wisconsin physician called in and really advocated for newborn testing for celiac. He felt that the numbers in the population with greater awareness, called for that. And I also ask it because as somebody who discovered at 55 that I have celiac disease, the effect on a person's health can be so dramatic. The malnutrition And the misdiagnosis over the years, starting when I was 18, have just been kind of wild and crazy, some very dire and some not so dire, and always turning out to ultimately be wrong, until we discovered that it was celiac. And the other situation with it is that my understanding is that a young person, once they discover a parent with an infant or a young child, or even someone into their 20s discovers that they have celiac, the turnaround can be dramatic, even 100% of their health regained by eliminating gluten. But for an older person, you can stop the progress by eliminating gluten, but the healing process
takes longer.
Not quite so successful. So my question is, what qualifies something for newborn testing? What numbers in the population? And do you see any future for celiac being tested?
Dr. Hill, may I turn to you first on celiac? You might just briefly explain what celiac is.
Well, I was going to sort of start by answering your question about what we use to determine what should be added to our panel. So in answer to your question, celiac disease is not one that we're currently considering. I wanted to sort of let you know what our criteria is, and it's not just Wisconsin's criteria. There's also a national organization that looks at what diseases should be added to the panel, and it's quite rigorous, the research that goes into determining what diseases are fit for newborn screening. Some of the criteria is the incidence in the population, whether or not it's prevalent and it affects a number of people. Newborn screening is really geared towards diseases that would affect a baby, an infant, in the sense that we want to be able to detect it early and then get them on treatment early, sometimes with even in the first week of life. So a lot of newborn screening tries to target diseases that are affecting the infant or the newborn. Some of our considerations, in addition, is the ability to have a high throughput, highly specific laboratory test to be able to identify the babies. And then, of course, there's other economic things to consider, the cost effectiveness of screening, and then also sort of the ethics of whether or not it's a good idea to screen. So I can tell you that at this point, we haven't considered celiac disease within our state. But those are some of the ideas of some of the considerations that we look at.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And it's essentially celiac is a intolerance to gluten.
Right. Correct.
Let's go to Harry in Madison next. Harry, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. My question is, is it a law that all babies born in Wisconsin must go through this newborn screening? And what happens in the cases where babies are born at home under the supervision of midwives?
Mm-hmm. Good questions, too. And May, would you want to take that?
Sure. By the state statute, every baby born in Wisconsin will undergo newborn screening. And about the home births, and actually we work close with midwives, and they can send a newborn screening to our laboratory. And we also make sure the screening the babies, as a result, we have the physician can take care of the babies with the screening positives. In newborn screening, we do have we call the opt out for any religion reasons, and parents can ask not do the screening.
Hmm. Does that happen very often?
No. Yeah, no.
All right, Harry. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate your call. Again, you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Dr. Held, you mentioned that there are always diseases under consideration or tests under consideration. Is there anything that you hope will become a part of the screening?
Well, right now, Wisconsin doesn't have anything specific on its radar for diseases to be added to the panel in Wisconsin. At the national level, there is a consideration being given to a lysosomal storage disease called Pompe. But it's has not been added to the panel. So I think it's important to mention that each state has there's a criteria of what diseases all states should screen for, but there is some states that have added additional diseases to the panel.
Okay.
And it's at the national level where they determine what diseases everybody should screen for.
Okay. Dr. Baker, you were going to add to that?
Yeah, I can add in a little bit. And go back to Dr. Hell said earlier, and any disorders be considered put in the panel will be going through the evaluation. And we have a criteria. We will look. In Wisconsin, we do have a called Newborn Screening Advisory Committee, and they have experts on the different area and to look, evaluate disorders before implement a test into the regular routine testing.
You know, this testing has to be done so quickly, and there are how many hospitals around, you know, and every hospital, I assume, is testing, though they have to be by law. Where, how does, is there, are there central places for the tests to be done, or, and?
Yeah, well, actually, so all of the newborn screening samples come to the State Laboratory of Hygiene, which is located on the UW campus. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I was just wondering. I wanted to point out, I guess.
So
that
we, Wisconsin has a little less than 70,000 births a year. And so in terms of what that means in terms of our workload for the laboratory, we receive roughly 300 to 400 samples a day that we analyze for the 44 different disorders. And it roughly takes us, most of the testing is done within 24 hours. A few of our tests take a little bit longer, but within 3 days, we have all our testing completed.
So if you're doing, if there's 60,000 births, so that's 5,000 a month, roughly.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
It's a lot of
samples, yes.
It's a lot of samples and a lot of testing. How many people are involved in the process, you know, offhand?
We have around 20 staffs. And we have about 10 chemists, and they perform the routine test. We also have a staff to take care of demographic information, like we said, birth weight and name. And this is a, yeah, it's, I would say, I mean, we have a very dedicated, hardworking staff because they know what we do, save a baby's life, and they're very motivated and hard-working people.
You can join in, too, with your questions and comments. We're going to take some more calls here, but there's a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. Email me at talk@wpr.org. You can also post a question that way or a comment, or a post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'd be certainly interested in knowing your experiences or just questions that you may have about this whole process. Let's turn to Vicki and Edgar next. Vicki, hello. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My grandson, 5 years ago, after his newborn screening, the parents were called at home, and he was diagnosed with having leukocyte adhesion deficiency. He made a lot of white blood cells, but they didn't do anything. They didn't go to the root of the problem. Mm-hmm. He needed surgeries. He ended up having a bone marrow transplant at Milwaukee Children's Hospital, and he's doing wonderfully.
And it was the testing that went on while he was still in the hospital.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I think it's one of the newer things they test for, the SCID,
for the immune deficiency.
Mm-hmm.
And after they were home, they got a call that he didn't pass the test. His belly button never healed from being born and needed surgery on that because he had nothing to fight off any diseases.
Wow. Dr. Baker, comment?
Sure, yes. And Vicky, well, thank you for sharing the story again. And you mentioned the SCID. SCID stands for Severe Combined Immunodeficient, and more known as a bubble boy.
Right.
Basically, when a baby has these disorders and they cannot fight bacteria, virus, so they have to live in a very isolated environment. That's why the bubble boy coming from. And Wisconsin is the first state in the nation to implement the test. And your grandson is the first baby benefited from that. So,
yes, he was.
Yeah.
Oh.
I met you at the Jeffrey Modell Foundation in New York.
Oh, yes, your family. Yeah, I do. And I think in the our open house, and if you don't mind, your grandson was there, and he is a very healthy, happy 5 years old.
Yes,
so when we see this, and we feel what we do make a difference, and thank you.
It sure does. And his parents did go to the Washington, D.C. to advocate that every state, because not every state tests for SCIDs yet.
Oh, that's wonderful. Vicky, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate it very much. And you may, as you listen in, may remember, it was a very young John Travolta movie. He was a bubble baby, a bubble kid. It's kind of probably brought a lot of very good attention to that issue, as a matter of fact, I would think. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. Of the 70,000, you know, test for 70,000, that's a lot of, or roughly 70,000. How many are there, how many times do we have, here's an issue or a problem? Dr. Held.
So we roughly estimate that about 125 babies are identified each year that have one of the 44 different disorders that we screen for. So that's 125 out of the 70,000.
Mm-hmm.
However, there are, with a screening test, we are not a diagnostic test. And I think that's an important distinction because we screen the whole population, and we're not a definitive answer. So on occasion, an analyte may be above our cutoff, and we follow up on it, but the baby may not have the disease.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to very hard in the laboratory to minimize that occurrence by improving our testing methods, improving the sensitivity and the specificity of our testing. We try never to miss a case, but occasionally we have what we call a false positive. But again, we try very hard to minimize that occurrence.
Yeah. And do you work, is there collaboration or working with doctors in the field on this?
Oh, absolutely. All of the states collaborate to try to improve our testing methodology.
And virtually every state is doing some testing.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Go ahead. Yes, go ahead, Dr. Baker.
Yeah, I just want to emphasize, and when we talk of screening, it's a risk assessment. And I just want to echo what Patricia was saying. It's not a diagnostic. So we need the family, when you have a screening positive result, we want them taking seriously and understanding the further test is needed be confirmed.
Yeah. Okay. We have some more callers online. Marianne in St. Charles, we'll go to you next. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. Thanks again for great topics. I was just wondering, as far as infant mortality goes, the latest statistic that I've seen is that the United States is 19th And I don't know if you, I'm sure you guys have insight into that, where the ball being dropped in these, you know, wonderful screening tests and then actually, you know, helping the birth, that they're, you know, just a better birth and that type of thing. And also, can you address the Rh factor? Because even though that's rare, it does affect a percentage of babies, and, you know, certain things like that don't seem like they've come very far in understanding what happens with the mother and the fetus and different blood types. Thanks very much. I'll mm-hmm. take my listen off the air.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Interesting points here. Dr. Baker?
Yes. The disease, there's 44 disease except congenital hyperthyroidism. They are genetic disorders, which is inherited. And most time, the parents we call the carrier because you have a two copy of defect gene, then we have disease. And if you only have one copy, and you are normal functionally, but just by chance, if the two people married, both carry this defect gene and they're normal, but their children each pregnancy will have 25% have a disease. So in this sense, the age is not much effect for the set of newborn screening disorders.
Mm-hmm. So the issue of you know, it's a whole other issue, this whole thing about where we stand in terms of infant mortality. I mean, it doesn't really, it may not directly relate.
Yeah, infant mortality is probably is a huge topic, and I think there's many factors that play into the mortality rates and how they increase and decrease over time. We're sort of looking at a very specific set of diseases that are really relatively rare, and probably as a whole, given that there's so few cases, would not affect the mortality rate in any great way, is my guess.
Yeah, that'd be my guess too. Are you doing some public information or some celebrations in terms of the 50th anniversary?
Oh, sure. Well, we recently, on Friday last week, the 12th of July, we had an open house at our laboratory. It was from 1 until 4, and we had guest speakers from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They came to speak, as well as some of our expert physicians on campus that came to speak regarding newborn screening and its importance. We had tours of the laboratory and a guest appearance by Bucky Badger, sort of the Wisconsin Works, if you will. And then we also celebrated our the retirement of our director, our previous director, Gary Hoffman. He was the director of the laboratory for many years, and he recently stepped down, and Dr. Baker and I took his place. So we had a wonderful open house and celebration.
Oh, that's well. What else goes on at the State Lab of Hygiene, by the way? Lots of things go there.
That's right. In which
my mother worked. I should mention my mother worked there for many, many years. So,
yeah.
But go ahead and talk about what goes on.
You know, my eyes most times is looking at newborn screening, and I think you asked the question before. In terms, it's a wonderful program. We really save a baby's life, and are we going forward? We have the 50 years. And we are looking forward another 50 years. Mm-hmm. And we will do more, like I said, but also we also have greater responsibility for the whole population. We have responsibility for the affected children. We also for the normal population. So every disorder, so we think about that. We need to be careful, evaluate, and things. Besides newborn screening, of course, public health laboratory, we have other components. For example, we have the division to take care of infection disease, and then we have some occupational, industrial hygiene issues we're dealing with, and we also have the division to do the environmental works too.
Yeah, so there's a lot that goes on at the State Laboratory of Hygiene. It's a busy place for sure. We have, just thinking about this whole business of newborn testing, up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, we have a link to UW Health's information for parents, and I think it's well worth taking a look at that.
Yeah, the one thing I would like to add on is newborn screening is not just the laboratory alone. It's a program. This program, beside we do the test, we have a Department of Health Service to oversee everything, and any babies be detected certain disorders. So we talk about dietary management, and the Department of Health Service will manage to provide dietary supplement. We also have a group expert have a great expertise in the different the disorders to be volunteer as a consultant, and when we have abnormal report out, and there take over, taking care of the babies. So it's a lot of people put effort together. We make this wonderful program.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for taking time to be with us today. And again, go to my Facebook page if you have some more questions. Well, we've got some links there that provide a lot of answers relating to this whole area. Dr. Heldbach, Dr. Baker, thanks again very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Dr. Patrice Held is co-director of the Newborn Screening Lab at the Wisconsin State Laboratory of Hygiene. Dr. May Baker, associate professor of pediatrics at UW-Madison, and the co-director of the screening laboratory. They do a lot of great work. And telling you, if we heard some really good stories today that I think just point out the importance of this kind of screening and how important it is to know one way or the other. Most times it's not there are no issues 90% of the time, but when there are issues, I'll tell you, if it's your child, you want them taken care of, and I think so does everybody else. So great to have them along, and we'll probably do this again sometime with them. It was interesting. Amazing what science and technology can do to improve health. Unfortunately, it can go both ways. Coming up next, children are spending a lot more time on their phones and in front of the computer screens, and that's created some serious health issues. We're going to talk about how to get kids moving. So I hope you'll stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.